Ladies and gentlemen, good evening, or actually afternoon, where it is in my location, and welcome to Rangers America, Episode 8. Unfortunately, no one is around to help me record at the moment, so I'm flying solo. Let's get right into the news. Clear is closing. TSA is tasked with protecting customer data. For anyone that hasn't heard about this, Clear is a company that had taken on the task of creating a registered traveler program to speed people through airport security. Kind of always seemed like a dumb idea to me, but apparently quite a few people did sign up for it. The chairman of the House Committee on Homeland Security has given the Transportation Security Administration until July 8th to explain how the agency plans to ensure the security of private data collected by a recently shuttered company that offered a registered traveler program. In a letter to the TSA's acting assistant secretary, committee chairman Benny Thompson expressed his concern over the abrupt closure of Verified Identity Pass, Inc. For a $199 annual fee, the New York-based VIP offered a service called Clear that was designed to help air travelers get through airport security checks faster by vetting their identities and backgrounds in advance. VIP was the largest of seven private companies approved by the TSA to operate a registered traveler program. VIP announced it was ceasing operations on June 21st because of financial reasons. The announcement prompted immediate concerns about the privacy and security of the detailed personal identity information, including fingerprints, iris scans, and digital images the company had collected on its approximately 260,000 customers. In his letter last Friday, Thompson expressed similar concerns over the handling of personal identity data in the aftermath of the Clear shutdown. Though the Registered Traveler Program is run by private companies, it is authorized by the TSA, which sets specific requirements for the operators to follow, Thompson said. The requirements included the need for every operator of the service to collect details such as full legal names, home address, date and place of birth, gender, height, driver's license number, passport details, and other information. At the same time, the agency appears to have been silent on what steps should be taken if a company that collects the data were to go out of business, merge, or be acquired by another company, Thompson noted. We are concerned about the security and safety of the information currently held by Clear, Thompson wrote. He asked the TSA to explain what role it will play in ensuring that adequate privacy protections are in place prior to any disposition of personally identifiable information. He also asked whether VIP had informed the TSA about its plans to shut down Clear, and whether the agency had asked the company about its plans for securing personal data. Doesn't look like there's much more useful information in the article, so I'll stop reading it there. I'm kind of surprised that they got over a quarter of a million people to sign up. $200 is quite a bit for the service that they're offering if you only travel a few times a year. Frankly, unless you're flying at least once a month, I don't think it would be worth it. You usually don't spend that long at the airport in the security line unless you're at one of the really busy airports, but in one of the major cities. It does say that the company is using a triple wipe process to completely erase hard disks containing customer data at airports. That's probably sufficient for anybody but the NSA, but why take a risk? I think they should probably destroy the hard drives instead, or maybe give them to the military to put in with maybe some nuclear waste. That would probably be a good spot for them. I'm surprised they didn't have some kind of system in place for sharing information between these companies that are licensed to operate registered traveler programs. I don't think they have a lot of value unless you have, you know, a registration that's with one company can be used at any airport. And they are going to have to follow very careful disposal procedures, because there's quite a lot of information there that's personally identifiable. Anybody that can recreate that is going to be able to very easily frame someone for a crime. So hopefully those hard drives never end up in the hands of the bad guys. Of course, it would be even smarter if they'd just, you know, not gone overboard on security in the wake of the September 11th attacks and, you know, had rational policies in place, you know, instead of having people take off their shoes to be x-rayed, which seems kind of ridiculous. Okay, on to our next story. NSA to build 23-acre data center in Utah. Hoping to protect its top-secret operations by decentralizing its massive computer hubs, the National Security Agency will build a 1-million-square-foot data center at Utah's Camp Williams. The years-in-the-making project, which may cost billions over time, got a $181 million start last week when President Obama signed a war-spending bill in which Congress agreed to pay for primary construction, power access, and security infrastructure. The enormous building, which will have a footprint about three times the size of the Utah State Capitol building, will be constructed on a 200-acre site near the Utah National Guard facility's runway. Congressional records show that initial construction, which may begin this year, will include tens of millions in electrical work and utility construction, a $9.3 million vehicle inspection facility, and $6.8 million in perimeter security fencing. The budget also allots $6.5 million for the relocation of an existing access road, communications building, and training area. Officials familiar with the project say it may bring as many as 1,200 high-tech jobs to Camp Williams, which borders Salt Lake, Utah, and Tooele counties? I don't know how to pronounce that last one, so hopefully I got it right, or close to right. It will also require at least 65 megawatts of power, about the same amount used by every home in Salt Lake City combined. A separate power substation will have to be built at Camp Williams to sustain that demand, said Colonel Scott Olson, the Utah National Guard's legislative liaison. He noted that there were two significant power corridors that ran through Camp Williams, a chief factor in the NSA's desire to build there. The NSA bills itself as the home of America's codemakers and codebreakers, but the Department of Defense agency is perhaps better known for its signals intelligence program, which is reported to have the capacity to tap into a significant amount of the world's communications. The agency also has been the subject of significant criticism by civil libertarians, who have accused it of unwarranted monitoring of communications of the communications of U.S. citizens. Let's see, the rest of the article says they're looking to move because they're worried about vulnerabilities after the terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001. They're doing it also because they have maxed out the local grid in their current headquarters. It's pretty funny. And also that they are building a similar center in San Antonio at the former site, at the site of a former Sony microchip plant. And Orrin Hatch is refusing to answer questions about the project. No surprise there, really. Officials from Hatch's office said they were not at liberty to discuss a classified matter, though it is referenced in several public documents and has been spoken about openly by state officials for the past week. The NSA officials also declined to comment immediately on the project, but pledged to answer questions later this week. I think the most important thing about this story is that the concentration on code breaking by the U.S. government. You know, it was probably a very good thing to have back during the Cold War when we had an enemy that was capable of creating and using sophisticated codes. But the War on Terror, these guys are not using real sophisticated code. They're, keeping their communications off of the electronic radar completely. So you can't even intercept their communications, much less decode them with computers. So $181 million wasted is probably what this is going to be. It also seems like $181 million and upfront and, possibly billions as a trade-off for 1,200 jobs and the need for enough power to run an entire city doesn't seem like the greatest of trade-offs. And just when you thought it might be over, there's more stupidity by the government. By-the-mile road tax could replace by-the-gallon federal fuel tax. The year is 2020, and the gasoline tax is history. In its place, you get a monthly tax bill based on each mile you drove, tracked by a global positioning system device in your car, and uploaded to a billing center. What once was science fiction is being field-tested by the University of Iowa to iron out the wrinkles should a by-the-mile road tax ever be enacted. Besides the technological advances making such a tax possible, the idea is getting a hard push from a growing number of transportation experts and officials. That is because the traditional by-the-gallon fuel tax, struggling to keep up with road building and maintenance demands, could fall even further behind as vehicles' gas mileage rises and more alternative fuel vehicles come online. The idea of shifting to a by-the-mile tax has been discussed for years, but it now appears to be getting more serious attention. A federal commission, after a 2-year study, concluded earlier this year that the road tax was the best path forward to keep revenues flowing to highway and transportation projects, and could be an important new tool to help manage traffic and relieve congestion. The decision by the 15-member National Surface Transportation Infrastructure Financing Commission was unanimous, which surprised Robert Atkinson, the group's chairman. But he said it became clear as the commission's work progressed that a road tax on miles traveled was the best option. If you're committed to the system being improved, then it was a no-brainer, he said. The commission pegged 2020 as the year of the federal fuel tax, currently 18.5 cents a gallon, to be phased out and replaced by a road tax. One estimate of a road tax that would cover the current federal and state fuel taxes is 1 to 2 cents per mile for cars and light trucks. The commission said work needed to start soon to prepare for a road tax, but more work has already been done than most people probably realize. Oregon did a field test in 2007, concluding it was possible to collect a road tax. The University of Iowa's Public Policy Center, with support from the Federal Highway Administration and 15 states, including Kansas and Missouri, began work a decade ago on how a road tax could be deployed. Now the University of Iowa, with the help of a $16 million federal grant, is beginning the field test that will eventually include 2,700 vehicles in 6 states. The vehicles equipped with computers and GPS devices will keep track of the miles traveled and send the data through wireless technology to a billing center that will compute simulated tax bills. There is a lot of work nationally going on that is beneath the surface, said Pete Ron, the director of the Missouri Department of Transportation. Missouri, like the federal government and other states, has been watching revenues from the gas tax decline. Last year, that revenue was down more than 3%, and so far this year, it has declined a similar amount. The state's highway budget was about to hit the rocks, he said, but the federal stimulus funds gave it some breathing room. Let's skip some of this article. And the obvious thing is, of course, mentioned in the article. Privacy concerns have been raised, and federal legislation also could set limits or otherwise provide safeguards on all the data that could be collected from GPS devices in vehicles. The Iowa study is looking at ways to protect privacy. I have an idea for how we can protect privacy in this case. How about we just don't collect the fucking data? There's this nice thing called an odometer that all the cars already have. Let's just report the odometer reading on a yearly basis, maybe when you renew your registration, to the government, and then we'll have federal highway taxes collected based on that, rather than somebody having access to where I've been. That seems a lot smarter to me. And yes, I know there's some problems with it, like people driving on private roads and people going out of the country, but if it's a, you know, if we're replacing a federal level tax, I would assume that this would, you know, be money that was going to the federal government anyway. So interstate travel isn't that big a deal. And, you know, the U.S. only has borders with two other countries, so putting in a system that allows you to get an exemption for the miles traveled in Canada and Mexico by having the border guards check your odometer on your way in and on your way out wouldn't really be that difficult. So I hope that this system dies because, you know, anything that can be abused eventually will be. So I don't care what privacy protections they put in place, someone is going to find a way to abuse it. Speaking of people finding ways to abuse their power, it seems that the New Orleans Police Department has been abusing their powers to seize people's property. ACLU files suit over police's failure to return gun. A New Orleans man is suing the city and its district attorney for refusing to give back a gun that police seized when he was arrested on drug and firearms charges. The American Civil Liberties Union, on Thursday, filed the federal suit on behalf of Errol Houston Jr., who was arrested last year following a traffic stop. The suit says the district attorney's office declined to prosecute Houston, but has refused to return his .40-caliber firearm. Houston claims Orleans Parish District Attorney Leon Cannizzaro has instituted a policy that firearms seized during arrest will not be returned to their owners. The ACLU says that policy violates Houston's constitutional rights. Cannizzaro says his office decides on a case-by-case basis whether to return confiscated guns. And that's actually the complete article. That's all I've got on this one. So if anybody wants to find any follow-up on this, as far as what happens, I would appreciate it. Anything that's decided on a case-by-case basis, you know, there needs to be hard and fast rules as to what pushes the decision one way or the other. And since this is a police department, which is a public agency, those rules should be up for public review. So hopefully this guy is going to get his .40-caliber firearm, whatever it happens to be, back from the police department as a result of this case. And on to our final story of the day. Security flaws found at federal buildings. Big fucking surprise there, right? Investigators from the Government Accountability Office over the past year successfully smuggled bomb-making materials into 10 high-security federal buildings, constructed bombs, and walked around undetected, according to GAO testimony set to be delivered today. The investigation uncovered critical weaknesses in protection provided to workers by the Federal Protective Service, the agency in charge of safeguarding federal buildings. More than 1 million government employees work in 9,000 facilities nationwide that are guarded by the FPS, including at least 350,000 Washington area workers. The revelation comes as the administration prepares to reorganize the agency. The GAO said security concerns prevent it from revealing the exact locations of the facilities. Good God, I should hope so. They included offices of lawmakers as well as offices for the Homeland Security, Justice, and State Departments. Wow. They got bomb-making materials into the Department of Homeland Security's buildings? I guess they're really not doing a good job, are they? In the past, security experts have criticized some GAO investigators for publicizing sensational findings that are not based on intelligence-driven risk assessments, but the GAO stressed it followed generally accepted government standards. That's the last bit of the article. Well, as I was saying earlier, the terrorist threats that we're facing today, such as they are, I think they're completely overblown, but that's another story, I guess. It's more about intercepting the plans that these people have rather than trying to, prevent anything from happening, because there's no circumstance where you're going to be able to prevent absolutely everything. The best thing you can do is try to find the people that are planning it and stop them. But I'm very surprised that at the level of insecurity that these buildings have. I wonder if this is true, that people actually brought in the bomb-making materials and constructed the bombs and then walked around with them. That seems kind of ridiculous. But a lot of things about the government seem pretty ridiculous to me. So I guess I'm just going to leave it there for you. Okay, on to our halftime music for today. We have Slim Sam from Seth Augustus off the album To the Pouring Rain, which is available on the web at SethAugustus.com, and Neophilia from Rebel Rebel off the album Explode Into Space, available on the web at Magnatune.com. Okay, on to the news, the Rangers news, and feedback. But there is no feedback today. Which is really a shame, you know. Get off your butts and write me something, you lazy bastards. Anyway, I'll be out of town from July 18th to July 27th. Agent Pugsley is going to be running the show in my absence, and I will be back the following week. And that's all I've got on news for today. Only two links that we're going to give you today. Kind of our usual things that are always there. WOGNetwork.com, Grant and Kobach's site. Stop by and see if you can help them improve it. And rantmedia.ca, which was the inspiration for all of this. Myself, as well as V's Rangers Radio Show, and quite a few other people out there that haven't written in to get on our show, but have definitely been around. And we have some recommended media for you as well. Avogdu sent me a link to an article on Backwoods Home, Preparing for Civil Unrest, by Claire Wolfe. It seems like a pretty good thing to check out. Never know what's going to happen. So you can find that at www.backwoodshome.com/articles2/Wolfe, W-O-L-F-E, 118.html. And Agent Pugsley sent me a link to submedia.tv, where you can find the Stimulators' It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine show, which I took a look at a couple of episodes and it seemed pretty entertaining, so hopefully you guys will enjoy that. And that's all we've got for tonight. This podcast is being released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives License.